A little bit about the center. Our center began in 1955. Oklahoma State University Extension has been one of our partners since the earliest years, and so we've been doing this a while. All those land-grant universities, several USDA agencies, we're not USDA staff, so we can actually tell you what we think, and we'll try to do that here today. All the data sources are from the USDA, and we'll think about that. That's at the bottom there. I want to give a little bit of an overview of the big picture, talk about some of the drivers in this marketplace. Obviously, things have come together to give us record cattle prices, and we'll talk about that. And then we'll ever so slowly get to the cattle market, which you might want to talk about. We'll save some time for discussion. So let's talk about where we're at overall in the marketplace. And fed cattle prices today are up again. And to my surprise, I thought they might be down this week. So that tells you how good we are at our office of forecasting these things. We're a record high territory, and we expect to be there for a while. We may soften here a little bit over the next several weeks. We may not. Probably will. We'll probably take another run at it a little bit in the fourth quarter. You know, can we trade a 160-plus fed cattle market come the fall or the spring? Absolutely. Can we get quarterly averages in there? I don't know. We might. Is there more than that in there? There may have to be, given what some of the cattle feeders are paying for feeder cattle. They're banking on even better things. 7 to 8 weight steers, pretty high. Premium 7 to 8 weight steers, pretty high. I mean, you know, this is a chart that you ought to look at for a minute and go, how do you get there? Doesn't happen very often. Probably never happened before. Hasn't happened in my career. I started doing this in 1983 at the University of Nebraska. Calf prices, same story. You know, we normally erode calf prices. We've had a rally for 3, 7, 8 weeks rather consistently here against the grain in these markets, and those don't always happen, but they're happening this year. Okay, cull cow prices. Cull cow prices come April, May, June. I'm not sure $1.25 will hold those things. The fed cattle market's going to go where it's going to go. I mean, a cull cow is a pretty valuable thing, and so we all talk about that. So that's where we think the market's at. Where it's headed is, you know, eventually these markets peak out, and we'll maybe talk about when that might happen. But right now, things are pretty good. In your territory, a lot of you have to rebuild your herds from the drought years, and, you know, there's an opportunity in here, but it's going to take more capital than ever, and we'll talk about that. So in terms of price forecasts, the dotted line is our 5 to 6 weight steers in the Southern Plains through 2015, and the blue line is fed cattle on the bottom. Kind of the slope is changing here a little bit. We got a little bit of a headwind. Pork and chicken maybe become a headwind again as we get out there, but we're probably still looking at higher prices, at least on an annual average basis. Let's also look at that and kind of think about it. Most of the run-up's behind us. Most of the run-up in the fed cattle. We're still going to rally here some more, probably get a little bit more in this, but the big run-up is probably behind us. That shouldn't really surprise us. So that's where we think. I didn't think I was really going to live long enough to talk about Southern Plains fed cattle prices and calves at these levels. A lot of you are thinking the same thing. Is this a market that's real? This is a market that's real. Is this a market that's going to be volatile? It has the potential to be. But there's some good signs out there still. So let's talk a little bit about the consumer side. You know, in economics, we have this two broad market drivers. One is the demand side of the equation, which is the consumer and what they're willing to pay for your final products and what feedlots are willing to pay. And this whole deal is the demand side. We're going to talk about the consumer demand side here. And they really don't care what your cost of production is or anything like that. They're looking at value from their perspective. And then we have the supply side of the marketplaces, which is where most of you come in, producing animals and then producing beef and beef that people eat and want to eat. The U.S. economy, that red bar to the far right, is the first quarter of this year. The U.S. economy stunk in the first quarter of this year. We had one of the worst winters on 20 years. From Chicago down to Atlanta, up the eastern coast of the United States, it was a brutal winter. And it really did hit the economy. Now, there's more apparently going on than even that. The economy is still sort of struggling in here, even though the jobs report was pretty good this morning. But that's pretty much an awakening there. That's a really weak economy, the worst that we had since the recession. So we make an index of demand as economists using the best data we have available. We look, first we're going to talk about the consumer spending side. So people talk about the economy and being out of the recession, but the dotted line up there is per capita disposable income adjusted by inflation. Still today, in this quarter, the average U.S. consumer has inflation-adjusted disposable income less than they did in 2008. In terms of so why do people mostly in the U.S. feel like things aren't much better? Because they don't have any real spending money than they had pre-recession. So how does beef fare in this whole environment? Maybe I'll get to the right slide here. So these are the annual average demand indexes. To economists, this is the positive and negative shifts in demand. That's all kind of academic. Look at the young people in the audience here. The great decline in the 80s was when the chicken industry whooped the heck out of the beef industry. Then we got some new products, and we did a lot in this industry, and we climbed up, and we had an Atkins diet kind of thing go on, and we had a great U.S. economy. And then since then, it's pretty much the demand profile has largely followed the U.S. economy, and it bottomed at that 75 up there at the bottom of the recession. It's been gaining ground since then. The only meat animal-based protein that can say that it's consistently gained ground since the bottom of the recession is beef. Pork can't say that. Chicken can't say that. Turkey can't say that. Lamb can't say that. Fish can't say that. Eggs can't say that. It's pretty amazing. Let's look at the first quarter of this year, and we talked about that. The real slowdown in the U.S. economy, the worst winter weather, restaurants pulling in their horns, and beef demand absolutely did not decline. It held together. And the second quarter of this year, it gained ground and gained momentum through the quarter. We don't have all the data yet, but it's pretty clear that the demand profile actually improved in the second quarter for your product, your end product. Pork industry is a different story. So when we think about this in the big context, the beef industry demand profile follows and moves with the economy and goes up and down. Pork and chicken really don't move much. You know, it doesn't matter how bad the economy is, people still eat pork and chicken. So the next recession we have is going to have more impact, like the last one, on beef than pork and chicken. The bottom line is here, this demand profile, we knew going into this year, we knew for the last 2 years the supply side's going to be tight. We've had drought. We've had all these things going on. Demand was going to be the clincher, and how good demand was going to drive price. And demand has come out on the domestic side better than anticipated. Even in the face of all this, part of it is, and we'll talk about pork and chicken a little bit more, but that's the bottom line. So let's talk about the other aspect of demand, and that's international trade. That upper picture there, are cattle on feed in Alberta, Canada. Lower right-hand corner, Blue Sky, modern feed mill. Cattle on feed in Via Mercedes, Argentina. Let's talk about export beef tonnage. We're just going to talk about beef here. You're all well-versed that we export all kinds of stuff but beef from these animals. We export livers and hides, and thankfully we do that because not much of a market here for livers and tongues and all those things. Beef demand, 2011, that spike up there helped our cattle market. Let's remember what these consumers are in these other countries. According to ERS, the latest data put out just a matter of weeks ago, the average U.S. consumer spends 11% of their disposable income on food at home and away from home. 11%. What's it in South Korea? 22%. What's it in China? Over 30%. What's it in Europe? Way over ours, 15 to 18%. So U.S. consumers don't spend a lot. So these foreign markets are much more price sensitive, mostly, than the U.S. market is. And this beef export tonnage hasn't really backed off. In fact, the prices, we're selling record dollar value, even though the tonnage has gone down. So even that foreign demand profile has been much stronger than anticipated. Hasn't eroded. And in fact, you know what, you know, demand relationships are. Usually when price goes up, the quantity goes down. Really hasn't gone down much. This is really a strong foreign demand for U.S. beef. Now, one of the countries that's been strong here, if we look at the top four countries, we exported about 94 different countries last year. Japan. Japan changed the rules. They now accept beef from U.S. animals under 31 months of age instead of 21 months of age. That's all well and good. Top four countries, two of them are on our border. Those of you in the policy arena, this is a policy meeting partly for some of you. Those are two we're having a little debate with over country of origin labeling. The import profile. So the U.S. economy is pretty strong. In fact, we're leading the world. The last recession, Asia drugged the world out of the recession, the growth in China, especially in South Korea, some of those other countries. This economic environment, the U.S. is leading the world. This demand, imports are picking up, but they're way less than we thought they'd be. We're sucking this imported product in here because we're mostly killing less beef cows. We have a strong demand for beef for manufacturing purposes and hamburger. But overall, given the drought in Australia, it's amazing that we haven't imported a bunch more beef. And why is that? Well, again, it's because of the lack of growth in cattle herds around the world, around the globe. Australia's in their third year drought. South America's sort of growing. Brazil's growing, but they're keeping most of the beef as their economy grows. So the world cattle numbers really aren't increasing much, and that's part of the reason we have record high cattle prices here, is that the world numbers are tight. Any questions or comments? Seeing none on that topic, here's how we'll do this. Since we have a big group here today, and we'll take these little breaks here. Nobody caught up with the macroeconomy. The other point of macroeconomy is if we can debate interest rates are going higher. Question is when and how much. So at these break times, you write down your little note there, right? Question for the end. And then if your handwriting's like mine, you won't be able to read it anyway. That's what I'm banking on. So let's talk a little bit about feedstuffs. The drought that we're currently in, the drought we had a few years ago, as in the livestock marketplace, we have three kinds of drought. Economists have to simplify things. We have a drought like you've had here where we decimate a few years ago. Our forage base in a big part of the country reverberates through our livestock system, especially the cattle country. Then we have the drought like in the Midwest where it damages our corn crop feedstuff supply and it reverberates back. It lowers calf and yearling prices, and we have a problem. Then we have 2012, where we have both of those at the same time. It's the worst-case scenario. Here we are in the drought picture today, and I'll tell you, I've been to almost every corner, except for California. That drought map overstates how dry it is. And we can see that in corn prices and pasture and range conditions. You know, corn prices are headed lower. We'll be lucky to hold 350 corn in Iowa at harvest this year. Okay? This is unprecedented. This corn crop's getting bigger by the day. That's good news for the livestock industry. Really good news. We had $7 corn not very long ago. And here's what we think happens to prices. And we're probably now too pessimistic. Your prices will be even lower. Annual average prices that dip down is this year, and then the dip up again is the corn crop that's not even planted here for 2015. But we're looking at a corn price scenario that's quite a bit different than in recent years. That can all change. We can have a drought in 2015. But this is what our forecasts are based off for those calf and yearling prices. And corn can even be lower than this, right? The odds are today that corn might even be a little bit lower than this. Some people are talking about Midwest corn yields across the board averaging 171 bushels per acre. We got field after field today that are going to make 200 bushels per acre in the Midwest. We've never seen a corn crop like this in southern Illinois, southern Indiana. Iowa's spotty. Nebraska's never been better. We got dry land corn in Colorado that's up to my shoulders today. Okay. The great ethanol thing is over. Okay, the great green bar of growth there in use of corn, which is driven by ethanol. Ethanol is now a mature market. It's no longer going to whipsaw the livestock markets like it did for most of the last 10 years. So this whole dynamic on the feedstuff side has changed and changed back to the benefit of the livestock industry compared to a few years ago. The ethanol industry is now mature. The byproducts industry is now mature. We got cheap natural gas. You can dry this byproduct and send it anywhere in the world. We now price these byproducts off their nutritional value. What an economic concept. Let's sell it based on what its feed value is. We do that now. This whole game has changed. Pasture and range conditions, the blue line. You know, only economists would do the percent that's poor and very poor. The percent that's poor and very poor ain't very big. Again, every corner of this country except California has better pasture and range than the maps indicate. In Wyoming today, the grass is up to the third and fourth wire on the barbed wire. We haven't seen that in 20, 25 years. That's setting the stage for something to happen on the cow herd. But let's digress. You thought that Darrell Peel is going, he's been digressing the whole time. Let's talk a little bit about pork and chicken. We'll talk about chicken. Porcine epidemic diarrhea is part of the reason we got here. And that's the pig disease. 8, 9, maybe by the end of this year, 10 million head of baby pigs have died. If you haven't ever thought about, I'm not a DVM, I'm not near qualified, I'm not even qualified to be an economist. But if you haven't thought about biosecurity on your ranch, just call a pork producer up, just dial some number in Iowa, and you'll be thinking about biosecurity on your place. I mean, this is a devastating disease. And here's what's happened. We worry about these other species because it's, look at where beef prices are at wholesale. And when we ramped them up in January, every CEO in this country and Safeway and every meat industry company, all the way to the top of every, they were getting daily reports on the beef market. And here's where we're at. So we worry about those competing meats, right, when beef is at these levels. Well, poultry production has been very profitable, and you have to worry about the economists scaling, but they've ramped up at one half the rate that they normally would with this kind of profitability. Why? Because they have a problem. We always think of the chicken industry as these people that can just respond immediately. But when you damage the birds that produce the birds, we call that the breeder supply flock, we have three problems in the breeder supply flock today, which we're slowly solving. First of all, we had high grain prices. The breeder supply flock is heavily, they're not controlled by Tyson and the big players. It's rather medium-sized operations. And they were beat the heck out of by the big chicken companies. We don't want your birds, okay? So they pulled back. Some of these people went out of business because of high grain prices. We didn't lose any Tysons or Pilgrim's Pride, but we lost some of the foundation of the industry behind the scenes. Second of all, we had this winter that we talked about where we really hurt those breeder supply farms on the East Coast and the Southeast. And third, they have a genetic problem in the male side of the birds that produce the birds, and they're not getting the hatchability out of eggs that they normally do. So guess who's benefited? The beef industry, because we haven't had the chicken. They're ramping up, and we'll start to see more output as we get into 2015. But again, about one half the pace that they normally ramp up. What's going on in the pork industry? Well, the light blue stuff there, wherever that is, I mean, this is the quarter we're in now. Year-to-year decline. Year-to-year decline. Porcine epidemic diarrhea. Pork cutout value. You take all these pigs out of the system. We forecast 6 months ago, tell you how good we are, but it's a disease that by now we'd be below the red line. And at the meat case, the consumer would have a real choice. And look where the wholesale pork market is. Okay? This is clearly part of the story. And the pork industry is still going to, even we get out here. Well, this is total pork and poultry. Let's get out here to the total aggregates. Even though we put everything together, these growth rates out here are not that much bigger than they were in 2013. So beef is coming into this picture, but also the pork and chicken is going to start to ramp up, but it's a process, it's a journey, and we're not going to get piles of tonnage in the marketplace until 2016. And then are we going to be able to export the growth or not? That's one of the keys. So this total meat supply picture in the, from a beef industry, the competing meats have been very favorable. In fact, never seen anything like it. And when the consumer goes to the grocery store, they look at choices and they go, I'm sticking with beef. Part of the bottom line. Anybody want to talk about cattle? Well, I do, so I'm going to do that, I guess. So let's remember where the cow herd is in this country. It runs up the spine of this country from Texas through this state to North Dakota and Montana. Those are the million beef cow states. And they're going to be the million beef cow states. And those are most of the states where the cow herd is going to grow. It's not going to grow much in the West. If we look at last year on January 1, we saw shrinkage around the country. And where are the headwinds that are going to be, besides economics, constraining beef cow herd growth? Well, part of it's out here in the Midwest where we turn some of this pasture land and hay ground into crop ground. It's not going back very fast, clear down in this territory. In Texas, we have headwinds in terms of people don't have to restock, so there's a headwind there. They're going to rebuild, but maybe not as fast as historically. California is still in a heck of a drought. They have 600,000 head of beef cows. In 2 years, they'll be down 100,000 head. You know, it's a shrinking beef cow state. What's going on in the upper plain states? There's a lot of ranches in that country that we're banking on over the next few years to help grow their cow herd to get control of the CRP ground. The CRP ground in Wyoming, Colorado, Nebraska, Montana, South Dakota, a lot of it's being plowed out this summer that's coming out of CRP, and what are they doing? They're planting wheat. These ranches are not going to be able to get that forage base to grow their cow herds that they were sort of anticipating. You can grow wheat out in that country, no-till. We didn't have that when we put it in CRP. And we have government programs that will pay you whether you grow wheat or not. I mean, if it dies, you still get some money, right? Pretty good deal. So there's a headwind in those northern plain states, too. So we need to think about those real-world headwinds of the forage base as one of the constraints to how fast you can grow a cow herd. As of January 1, USDA said there was 1.7% more heifers planned to be replacements than a year earlier. That number, in our estimation, has been growing in recent months. Okay? So where are we sitting? Beef cow slaughter is getting smaller every week. This week's number that came in this morning, we're going to have to rescale the darn chart. We're right here this summer nationwide at the turning point of a cattle cycle. We're right here this summer at the turning point of a cattle cycle. It's a slow process, but we're there. We got the economics to do it, and we got the forage to do it. So here's what we think is going to happen. Here's the good old cattle cycle. It goes up and down. Mostly goes down, up and down, up and down. So these are our numbers as of January 1, 2015. Total cattle herd and the beef cow herd could be down slightly, could be up slightly, could be probably about unchanged. We're holding back the heifers, though, to start the process more clearly, and we'll see that probably between the lines in USDA's report tomorrow. But let's look at the rate of growth in this cow herd. Here's our most optimistic scenario, and here's our lower scenario. I'm not even sure we're going to rebuild the cow herd back to that point where we started the last cattle cycle. And that's the pattern of past cattle cycles. We don't get back to the prior number. I think it's a very slow rebuild. After we get through the restocking, some of these ranches are understocked. You all understand that here. After that, due to these other headwinds, it's a slow process and probably slower than normal. You know, these pretty good spikes up, it's probably in between those two. So our estimation would be this is probably a slow rebuilding process. That's pretty good from a price outlook perspective. One of the questions we often get, the dotted line's the old cattle cycle and beef production. Beef production's on the red line. And, of course, you know, the red line hasn't come down partly because carcass weights are heavier and heavier. And the other reason the red line didn't come down in 2011, 2012, 2013 was what? Drought. Because cows are in beef production. And all the cows we slaughtered. And here we are this year where we got the double whammy of steer and heifer slaughter down and cow slaughter declining. And look what beef production did in 1 year, billion pounds overnight out of the system. That's going to raise prices. So sort of masking the beef supply big picture situation has been the large cow kill that we had up until this year because of drought. And now it's all come at the same time. So in terms of beef production, the numbers, these are our forecasts. This is a much better camera than I had at the last meeting. Because, excuse me for saying this, but the color of that brown was calf scour brown if I ever saw it in my life. Let's look out here to the fourth quarter 15. It's coming down, but it ain't coming down as fast as it did up there. Okay? We're going to narrow that gap as early as the fourth quarter 15. There's lots of reason why. Probably dressed weights and all this stuff coming together. But I think that's the reality. We get to 16, maybe we'll see an increase sometime in one of those quarters. It depends on a lot of factors. But that's the nature of the marketplace in terms of the supply side. Another factor that's coming on that starts to show up as early as the fourth quarter of 2015 is that the U.S. dairy industry is part of the beef production system, not only in terms of cull cows. This year, we're going to get 100 to 120,000 head of calves that used to, a year ago, went to veal production. The veal industry is disappearing in the United States of America. And those Holstein steer calves are part of our beef system going into feedlots, and that's going to accelerate. The beef cow, the dairy cow herd is growing about 10,000 head a month, and almost all those steer calves are going to feedlots, not to veal production. Okay? And that's part of the reality. One reason we're not going to need to build as many beef cows is the dairy cows are producing a bigger and bigger proportion of our feeder cattle. Now let's talk about the cattle cycle going up and down. And these are our estimated cow-calf returns. And don't believe these numbers, right? If you're a farm management specialist, you go, yeah, you got to, the rancher has to pay themselves. No kidding, you got to pay yourselves. We don't consider that here. We're market economists. So we use cash cost plus pasture rent, okay? So you're not paying yourself. You're not, you know, but that's how markets respond. These are the numbers out of our shop that USDA uses in their macro model and that FAPRA uses, okay? People respond to this. So where are we at here? There we are. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. We're going to make $450 a calf this year. Now, don't tell your banker that you shrunk your cow herd in recent years, right? Just tell them you're going to make $450 a cow. Not that you have 20% less cows. You know, and it's going to be over $400 on this basis again next year. Okay? So what are you going to do? There's a bunch of people that are going to, need to start planning today, talking to their tax person. Don't wait till the fall across the United States. And I realize you've been through the middle of the drought down here. We also know the big headwind is the capital it takes to be in this business. We used to talk on our basis about $350 to run a cow cash basis. And then after ethanol and the grain price run up, we were talking about $550 a cow. And after the huge feed costs in the winter of 2013, we came up with $800 a cow. Again, we're going to make $400 per cow, $420 this year, above that. This takes more capital than ever to play this game. Another reason that the cattle buildup is going to be have a headwind, and it's simply the capital requirements and the huge cost that it is to buy a cow or a bred heifer or buy land or any of those things, right? It's a reality. So how is the growth going to have to come? Well, people want to talk about the growth's going to have to come organically. That's almost like a bad word, right? But we're going to have to build it, you know, more internally than we probably have in the past. It's going to be a slow process because of the huge capital requirements. On the cattle feeding side, based on our estimates today, now this doesn't include beta agonists, so we're making money. We've been making good money for 6 or 8 months on cattle feeding, finally. But our break-evens up here for cattle priced in the last 2 weeks are $168 a head for a 750-pound steer. Now, we might get to that level, but there's not much profit left in these yearling cattle. Now it takes the sharp pencil. Summer grazing programs work pretty darn good this year because you bought calves and you're going to sell them for more than you bought them for per hundredweight. That ain't going to happen again. That's not normal. Right? We made money putting cattle into feedlot. Well, they bid most of that out of them today. So going to winter wheat grazing programs, all these things are going to take the sharp pencil and it's going to take real management and real moxie to buy calves right. Because, the headwind's already here. You can see it in the feeder cattle markets. Even though they kind of go up and down, who's really out buying the calves and yearlings today? Really only the big three feedlot companies. So let's summarize. Let me turn around to summarize. Oh, yeah, I remember that. Consumer demand's pretty good, surprisingly good, domestically and foreign. There's going to be some challenges ahead. We're going to reduce beef output. When's the price peak come in this cattle market? Could be 15. You have a short corn crop in 15. The price peak will be in 15 or 14. Probably it's 2016 in my forecast. Could be as late as 2017, and if everything keeps going right. Now, this is a peaking out of a market that's going to peak out of record territory. We're still going to be clearing on a cash cost basis over $350 a cow. I mean, it's not like we're going to be losing money, but the peak is out there, and it's not that far away from a cattle business perspective. I put most of my bet today on 2016, depending on what the corn crop does, pasture and range, exports. I mean, all the crap that can go on, right? That doesn't mean it's a disaster, but that means there's a peak in a market, and markets have a peak. So let's also think a little bit about cattle feeding. Cattle feeding's changed. My simple assessment of the packing industry is they partly stayed in this game with really tight margins at times because they're big firms and they're well capitalized, and Tyson owns chicken companies and JBS owns chicken companies. So they, you know. But even the smaller firms have sort of stayed in business partly because they've integrated down the chain. They cook meat. They further process. They've been doing those kinds of things. How have the cattle feeders stayed in business? They've sort of integrated back the other way. They've tried to get control of these calves, especially earlier and earlier, to fit their system program, to go into their program, to go into their multi-sort feeding system, which is way different than a few years ago. Cattle feeding is nothing like it was 10 years ago. I mean, in terms of feed efficiency, all this stuff is much better. And they're going to continue to do that. The reputation cow herds in the U.S., some of you got calls earlier this year, way earlier than you ever got calls, with somebody trying to buy your calves. And that's the nature of the game. That's a big change. It's a change where you actually have to know your cost of production, because you could very well get a call out in the country in January or February saying, and what do you want for those calves in September? What do you want for those yearlings in August? What do you want for those cattle coming off wheat pasture that you haven't bought to put on wheat pasture yet? That's the business environment that we're already in. So, good times. Any questions or comments? I think I'm out of time. I'm sure I'm out of time.
You still have a few minutes.
I'm definitely out of time. So, you know, what's the lifestyle? You know, we told you for several years, and our members, Dr. Peel, told you there's better times ahead. There, even with the drought, there is a top to the market, and we're out here telling you today that the top's out there somewhere. But I don't think it's a wreck. Questions, comments, or ideas? Okay. If you don't have any, then I tell a story, and you'll really regret that. So can we have one question, please? I don't have an answer, but go ahead.
Increased price of production and, of course, increase in cost. Can you talk a little bit about inflation and where the general local economy is as far as inflation is concerned?
Inflation. So inflation's a really interesting deal here. And economists, we've been studying it for years, and we don't have a damn clue. But inflation's part of the story. Inflation is, you know, certainly in the system. If inflation picks up, it's going to feed back. So we're going to digress, and we're going to talk about inflation, interest rates, and exchange rates. These are all related to each other. So if inflation picks up a little bit, or let's say the Federal Reserve. So the Federal Reserve has made a grand change about 6-8 months ago, right? They were really trying to keep interest rates low. They were beating down. They were quantitative easing, all this stuff to low interest rates. They essentially changed. They didn't want to make it this simple, is that they were trying to push the market, and now they're following the market. Okay, so the Federal Reserve says, right, when unemployment comes down, we're going to tighten money a little bit and all that. Okay, interest rates start creeping up. Well, now we got the Federal Reserve saying the demand for money is going to pull up interest rates a little bit, not a bunch, maybe 1% here over the next year. But also they're going to tighten the money supply, which is going to creep it up more. So what are the bankers telling the bankers? Test your ag profile and add 3% to interest cost over the next 3 years, and those are the farmers and ranchers you want to finance that can afford to do that. So first of all, you do that. As you raise interest rates, what's going to happen? Well, the exchange rates are related here, and you're going to start to lower or raise the value of the U.S. dollar. It's going to become a little bit more of a headwind in the export markets when all this unfolds. So when that starts to happen, I mean, you're going to see higher interest rates. You better budget for that in your planning sense. But you need to understand that it sort of reverberates through the system, and As soon as you get in, it can spin out of control. It's not the 1980s all over again. We're on our family ranch in California. We paid 16.5% interest for an operating loan. We're talking about going from 3.5% today to 6.5%, right? But you better be able to withstand that game. And everybody's pretty leveraged, but on the meat processing side of this industry, but not so much on the producer side. So I didn't answer your question, but it's interesting how these are all probably going to come together, and we're going to turn around in a couple years and say inflation's up and interest rates are up, and we're getting some headwinds in our foreign exchange markets, so we're not quite exporting as good. It's all going to be kind of related. And we're probably on that trend starting to appear. Yes, sir. Yeah, they put themselves in a real box, haven't they? You're saying that they got all this debt, and if they start raising interest rates, the government cost of debt's going to go up. We got a bit of a problem here, don't we? And the Federal Reserve is going to pay some attention to that, but if we start pushing up inflation, they're going to have to pay attention to that too. So we're going to be, this thing can get volatile. It's going to be we've got to the point where you painted both fiscal policy and monetary policy into a box. And how it unfolds, we really don't know, but probably be prepared somehow to have to pay higher interest rates. And what's going to happen to the federal debt? It's going to go up as they have to pay off this higher and higher debt. It's going to be a quandary. It's going to be, we don't have an answer. Next question, please. Part of the solution from a macro policy is inflation a little bit, right? I'm not sure that's a solution, but it's probably what's going to happen. Seeing no more questions and comments, the grass is always greener somewhere else. Let me tell you my family history story. The grass is always greener for young people. You think about that. So my great-grandfather combined all the family assets together from his uncles and his brothers and put together the ranching unit as one big unit in Northern California. And he went to college for 2 years, and he decided this whole game was a land game. And so he put it all together, and then he flat out leased the whole thing out and penciled a profit. Moved my grandmother and my two uncles and his wife and everybody to San Francisco, and he was going to make money now, mostly in the real estate market, understanding that the grass is always greener. Little thing happened called the San Francisco earthquake. Shook him to death. Burned him down, he ran his ass back to the ranch and never left again. So it's not always greener somewhere else, even though it's a drought maybe where you're at this year. Thanks for the invite. I appreciate being here.